Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Come up, your best friend.
Oh, my God.
Come up with that.
Wait, nobody's touching that.
Don't you dare.
Too scared to do that one?
Oh, heck no.
Hell no.
No, I ain't playing that game.
Dude, I'm not doing that.
Wired, can't hit it.
88, not the gate.
Around with 88. Have some presence in the pocket.
Give out your best rainbow impression. Go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I'd be dipped in dog shit.
I ain't wish him no damn heaven, bro.
Look like a polished turd.
Take the riches to it.
Run when it ain't.
I'm not going to impersonate it, but happy birthday, Coach.
Happy birthday, Braves.
Happy birthday, Braves.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Happy birthday, Braves.
Happy birthday, Coach Ray.
Happy birthday?
I don't have an impression, but happy birthday, Coach. Happy birthday.
Appreciate you taking the chance.
Happy birthday, Mike Vrabel. They put a camera up there for the Titans players to do their best impersonation of Mike Vrabel, and most of them not willing
gotta be careful
to take
there.
The bait. Anything they say, right. Cannon will be used against them by their head coach, especially Vrabel. Vrabel's got an edge. He's got a saltiness to him.
Definitely.
He's not afraid to tell you to go.
Yeah. Shove it where the sun don't shine. That's for sure. It's that Belichick Parcells way about him that, yeah, there's a quiet scariness about him that is very hard to pull off, but yet he pulls it off.
And it works on you. I know that. Whenever we interview him in person,
yeah.
You're very
right.
You're very edgy. You're very skittish.
Well,
nervous when you're around Mike Vrabel.
I don't get nervous. You know, I like the guy. I have great respect for him. You know that. I'm always rooting for his teams just because of the style in which they play. It's old school. It's detailed. He's an outside the box thinker with some of the things he's done and clock management, all that. So yeah, I want him to like me, you know. But I don't know if he does. And that's just the way he is, though. That's kind of like you're not sure. And he was like that as a player too. You know, that I think I've told you before. My first experience with him was I was the year after I lost my spleen. I was kind of in the preseason warming up, and he was walking around the field early on, and I was like, "Oh wow, that's cool. That's Mike Vrabel. I mean, he's the guy that catches all these damn touchdowns in the Super Bowls." And you know, I'm gonna say hi to him. Man, he looked at me like I wasn't even there, and he just kept walking. And I was like, "Damn, okay, the New England Patriots are here to play today." And he's like that, you know, on a lot of days.
He's got that habit of withholding approval, respect, acknowledgement,
right.
Anything that does keep you on your toes. One of the sayings that I heard one of the players that was willing to try to impersonate Mike Vrabel utter, "I'll be dipped in dog S-T. My mom used to say that without limiting it to dog. She would just say, "I'll be dipped in a word that sometimes we'll say, sometimes we don't." So that warmed my heart to hear one of my mom's old phrases get attributed to Mike Vrabel. And I don't know how this works. I mean, we've told the story in the past more than once or twice about how I've tripped down this path of having to spend inordinate amounts of money for our award winners. And it all started because when I texted Vrabel that he was the coach of the year for 2021, he said, "What do I get?" I joked a canned ham, dusting off an old David Letterman line. He said, "I liked honey baked," yada, yada, yada. I sent him a honey baked ham and he was very impressed. One thing you can do to win the approval of Mike Vrabel is give him food. So that's how it went from ham to expensive cigars to this Billy Baru putter to the Justin Jefferson air-cooled supercomputer video game processor thing, and then Howie Roseman with the donations that were made matching the most expensive prize that we gave last year. So it's caused me to rework the entire thing. But
you didn't
that's
send,
just all to...
You didn't send Vrabel anything for his birthday? You didn't send anything?
No, I didn't. I texted him. I texted him happy birthday. This is where I'm going. Just because I don't know how off the record any of this is, but I texted him happy birthday.
Right.
I saw it was his birthday.
Yeah.
And he responded saying, "Thank you, 48. And I said, "You know, hey, I'm 10 years older than you. You should respect your elders." And his response was, "F off," although he spelled out the whole word.
I like it. My kind of guy right there.
How's that for respect was the follow-up. So
right.
Thanks, Coach. Happy birthday, Coach.
That's good. Yeah. Well, hey, there. Yeah. He's. We talked about him a little yesterday with some of the, you know, the approach he has in the offseason, you know, the approach he had in the preseason. You know, I thought that was very interesting. Of course, letting another, you know, coach the football team on Saturday. That was a big deal, definitely. And yeah, there's a style in football in which his teams play that are they're refreshing. It is. It brings me back to the glory days of the 80s. It's smash mouth. It's defense. It's, you know, taking care of the football that way and a calculated shot down the field. So I think Vrabel's the man, and I think slowly but surely he's going to get this Tennessee Titans team, you know, back to the elite class of the AFC as far as talent on the field and getting that roster the right way, which, you know, has maybe faltered the last year and a half.
Well, and the reality is he's found a way to hold it together with all those different players, all those different guys on the roster, record in 2021 and challenged it in 2022. And, you know, it gets to deeper questions of roster construction, health of players. The things we've talked about when you see other teams have clusters of injuries is there's some deeper issue. And he emerged from the internal tug of war against John Robinson with the victory. And, you know, there was never any leaks. There was never any discussion.
No.
There was never any chatter. There was no media campaign launched by Mike Vrabel to win the thing. He took care of business discreetly and internally, and the next thing you know, Robinson's out, and I'm sure it traces to decisions like trading for Julio Jones, something I firmly believe Vrabel didn't want to
do. Sure.
The trade of A.J. Brown, something Vrabel clearly didn't want to do based upon the video of the extreme neck twitch as it was all going down. We don't think he was on board with drafting Malik Willis last year, although Willis has kind of earned a spot in Vrabel's heart as somebody who, you know, is getting the most out of his talent.
Right.
But the Terrell Williams move,
I really hope
that giving an assistant coach the ability to be the guy for a preseason game will become a thing.
Catch fire.
Because, you know, the reality is there's a handful of agents that feel like they control these things, that they pull the strings of ownership, that they decide who's ready to be a head coach and who isn't. They've got a bunch of different clients. I mean, I don't want to name names, but there aren't a bunch of guys who specialize in representing head coaches. If you are in the business, you know who they are. And again, I don't want to be accused of picking on one guy and omitting someone else. You know who they are. They know who they are. And what they do, or what they try to do, is create an assembly line, because they got a bunch of different clients with conflicting interests and they all want the same thing. They want to be NFL head coaches.
Sure.
So part of what these agents do, they get these guys to buy into this idea that there's a pecking order and that it's this guy's year, then it's this guy's year, then it's this guy's year. And the agent's job is to place each and every client in a head coaching job. And sometimes when you have a younger coach who decides that he's going to wait, a lot of times he's been manipulated by his agent into believing that because the agent's got some other client that needs a job. So it's not really about, and I'm just giving you an example. Yeah, I have no idea whatsoever. Right. I don't even know who represents Ben Johnson. But when the window is opening for Ben Johnson to potentially be a head coach somewhere else, and all of a sudden he closes it, one possible explanation is he knew he wasn't going to get an opportunity anyway, so this looks like he's being above the fray. The other potential explanation, one of the other potential explanations is, and again, I don't even know who represents him, but one of the explanations is he's being represented by an agent who's decided, I got another client that needs to be a head coach, and if he gets passed over by one of these younger guys, he's never going to be a head coach. So there's a lot of that that goes into it.
A lot.
That is separate and apart from who's the best candidate. So this is a way to get some coaches some exposure. How do they look in that role? Do they look the part? Do they act the part? How do they do? And maybe that gets them onto the radar screen, or at least in a position where they can compete with the agents who think they're pulling the strings on this process and convincing the owners to represent their guys,
We need guys to break in, break through that, you know, like you're talking about, whatever, break that barrier down of, yeah, this is the closed little circuit of, you know, people who have been around the NFL, the little club of connections and all that. And not all coaches are, you know, privy to that. They're not. You know, some of them just knew one guy and got in the league, or two guys and got in the league at a low level. And they haven't been able to expand, you know, the people they know and the connections throughout football that way. So that's where the agent comes in handy. And then, as you're explaining very nicely, is, yeah, the agents have a lot more power and than people realize. They control a lot of the inventory. They can be very manipulative. With players or coaches that way. And, yeah, hopefully this kind of breaks down a few of those barriers to help out a few of these guys who are NFL-worthy head coaches, but they're flying under the radar because they're doing it the right way. That's what's messed up, too. You know, be a coach, do your thing, do your job, blah, 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 blah. Those guys never get anything. You know, that's Eric Bieniemy a little bit. No politicizing, no making calls, whatever, blah, 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 and all of a sudden you're stuck there. But he's doing everything. Hey, that's what the organization told you to do, what the coaches told you to do. But it's the guys that are working the back channels and calling people in the media, calling agents, calling teams, doing that, they get the job. And therefore, that's where it's a little messed up, too. A lot of the times, the people that are trying to do right by the team, right by the boss that's, you know, their head coach or whoever, they're the ones that get left in the dust because they don't, you know, politic themselves and put themselves out there in a way to get them noticed by some of these owners.
I think we're touching on one of the hidden factors in why it's harder for minority coaches to become head coaches because you have to play that game.
You have to.
A lot of people don't want to play that game. They just want to do their job. And if you're not playing the game, and if you're not represented by one of the agents that does have the ability to manipulate not just their clients, but the owners, that's the key. They set the table for the owners. And I'm not saying that happens all the time, but it is one of the factors here because it's very subjective. It's not like who runs the fastest 40 or, you know, who has the best stats coming out of college. You know football talent when you see it. The evaluators know who the best players are, and they go get them. With coaches, especially unproven commodities, guys who have been coordinators or assistant coaches at, you know, a position, not even yet a coordinator. And every once in a while, there's a Herm Edwards who makes that leap without being a coordinator. But those jobs aren't as easily identified and quantified as this guy can be a head coach. So the owners do rely on these agents who kind of separate wheat from chaff and decide who the best potential candidates are from their interactions with them, and the owners just defer. That happens, I think. Those agents have far more power and control over this process of placing coaches in head coaching jobs than I think anyone realizes. And of course, when those coaches burn out and don't get the job done and get fired, it's not like the agent gets blamed for serving up somebody who can't do it.
No,
you just move
right
on to the next candidate that the agent has at the top of his list to become a head coach somewhere else. Maybe to replace the guy that got fired. One client out, another client in.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. There's a lot to this issue. That's why it's not easy to fix. It's not. And, you know, it goes into the players, too. You know, I don't want to get into specifics about it, but I could go one day. We could talk about those stories about how I
– It does
you know,
happen.
Yeah.
Oh, it happens.
You know, I want this guy on this team because I have this player who's making this guaranteed money on this team, and now this guy's going to take his job. So, wait, let me finagle this to where I get this guaranteed money, and now this guy gets on a team and gets guaranteed money and I don't lose one of these pots of gold here. That's the crap that goes on behind the scenes too by agents that I don't necessarily love. And, you know, learned more and more about that as my career went on. And of course, even more once my career was over going, damn, I didn't realize it worked like this.
There are some agents who also have an attitude where they decide they don't like a certain coach, they don't like a certain GM, and they're going to try to get that person fired. And one of the ways they do it is they keep their best players away from that team, even if it may be in the interest of those players to be on that team.
Yeah.
That's why when you introduce that third person into the relationship, anytime you do that between employer and employee, when that third person is in there, that third person may have his or her own agenda that can affect what the principals are trying to get done. And we got down this rabbit hole simply because the Terrell Williams experiment, letting him be the head coach for the Titans preseason opener, is aimed, I think, in part at busting through this idea that the agents are the kingmakers when it comes to who the next head coaches are going to be, and let's have it done more based on merit. Let's have the owners willing to ignore what the agents are trying to feed them and make their own decisions and assessments about who the head coaches should be. Because the agents really know that much more than the owners.
Happy birthday, Vrabel. Yep.
Thank you for allowing us to burn off the first 15 minutes of the show. We got plenty of stuff to get to, and let's get to it now. Big news yesterday, a couple of running backs who had been looking for employment now have it. We're going to start with Dalvin Cook agreeing to terms on a one-year deal with the Jets. We reported last night it's a $7 million base package with $1.6 million available in incentives. My guess is the actual contract is structured in a way to have a much lower cap number this year with money kicked into future years. I believe that Cook did the deal last night once he saw what the next guy we're going to talk about, Ezekiel Elliott, got from the Patriots, and Cook realized, I better get what I can while I can because this market continues to dip for veteran running backs. So he gets up to 8.6. He'd been holding out for something closer to the 9 or 10, and he was due to make 10.4 from the Vikings this year. He had to do the deal. It was time to get it done. And I admire the restraint that the Jets and the Dolphins had to not get into a tug of war for Dalvin Cook and start throwing more money on the table. They waited for him. They both waited for him to make up his mind. I think all along the Jets had more on the table than the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins would have found a spot for him, but they got plenty of guys in the running back room.
Right.
The Jets always had this need, this urgency to have someone around that they can count on because they still don't know whether and to what extent Breece Hall is going to be as effective as he was early last year before he tore his ACL, Chris.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think either team was desperate, right? It was more like icing on the cake to a degree. But the Jets certainly, I think, had more of a need. You know, you said it right, Breece Hall, the injury. Then you start to look at the rest of the group there. And wait, you got a veteran quarterback, right, who's going to be making a million checks at the line of scrimmage. We know he's the new sheriff, right? I mean, Aaron Rodgers, you know, is took over for Peyton Manning, maybe not to that level as far as the guy that does things at the line of scrimmage, all the checks, the signals, all of that. And you're going to trust a bunch of, what, rookie running backs? Second-year running backs, right, Mike? Oh, hey, we're trying to protect the 40-year-old quarterback. Hey, you know, young running back who's still learning protection schemes and little nuances there. That just didn't seem right. And I think that's where, at the end of the day, they looked at it and went, wait, we don't know if we got running backs that we trust, you know, here in the trust tree to help Rodgers out when he does all this stuff at the line of scrimmage, let alone he upgrades the room. And that's where, you know, I think is the first positive, at least for the Jets. He upgrades the room. We know he's good between the tackles. He's good in the pass game, and he'll be ready to pick up blitzes. And I think that's where, you know, there's a ton of benefit for the Jets, Rodgers, and this offense.
And he was a key factor in four of Minnesota's 13 wins last year. The win over the Dolphins, the win over the Commanders, the win over the Bills. He lit that fuse on the comeback down 27-10. He busted an 80-yard touchdown run that started the intrigue of, well, maybe they can do something here. Yeah. And then in the Colts game, he scored the touchdown that completed that historic comeback on a screen pass and took it the rest of the way to the house for the touchdown that forced overtime. So he's still got plenty of gas in the tank, and the Jets have the need. Now that they're all in with Aaron Rodgers, they needed that extra little something in the backfield. And when you look at what Aaron Rodgers' cap hit would have been under the contract that was in place at the time the trade was done, and remember, Rodgers moved money around to help the Packers, but the Jets were expecting a $15 cap charge this year, $15 million, excuse me, $15 would be quite a deal, $15 million cap charge for Aaron Rodgers this year. It got cut down to like $8.8 million. So, you know, there's extra money. Thanks to Aaron Rodgers, some of that extra money that Rodgers left behind allowed them to go out and get Dalvin Cook to a $7 million cap charge with another $1.6 million potentially available. So it's a win for the Jets.
A win for the Jets, definitely. And a win for Dalvin Cook, at least for now. I think this is a great spot for him. They're not going to drive him into the ground and give him the ball 350 times up the middle, you know, and crush his body that way. It's going to be a space game a little bit. They got some other running backs to where it can lessen the wear and tear on him, and that'll be good too. But, you know, Mike, you know, we talk about the Dolphins, the Jets, the team, and all that. And, hey, we, you know, we're all the Jets, and how's it coming together, and the new nucleus around the quarterback. And we know that takes time, and it's not going to be easy, right? And we know how good the AFC is and the AFC East is. But after two preseason games and just looking at the Jets and feeling the vibe and hearing about practice last week in Carolina and watching that game and what they were doing on the defensive side of the ball in that game, we're getting towards the time of the year where we got to pick teams to go into the playoffs, right? So I'm starting to kind of go through those exercises in my brain. And I think the Jets are just like, as much as I go, ooh, there's a lot of new parts and there's going to be pressure and it's spotlight on them, I think I'm coming to the determination that they're too talented for me not to put them in the playoff field when it's all said and done. The defense, some of the young guys who need to see turn the corner, they have turned the corner. The Jermaine Johnsons, the Will McDonald, who they drafted in the first round. I was told by somebody out there in the Carolina Jets scrimmage and that practice that Quinnen Williams was unblockable, that he literally had double-digit sacks and was in the backfield the whole practice. Right? So you look at that, the direction the O-line's going in. If we could throw up the graphic again, you look at Rodgers and go, damn, he's got Garrett Wilson, and everybody's gushing about him, and they gushed about him last year. Mecole Hardman, Corey Davis, Alan Lazard, the running backs, and you just go through it, and you go, I mean, there's going to be, you know, some bumps in the road, but I just look at them and go, damn, they're so talented across the board right now. I'm definitely putting the Jets in the playoffs when I have to do our preseason, you know, playoff tree and pick teams and do all that stuff.
Just remember,
I know
every team in that division has an incredibly difficult schedule.
Yeah.
In addition to playing each other twice,
I know,
which is six difficult games for all four teams. Every team of the AFC West, every team of the NFC East. So, other than winning the division, it is not going to be easy to get in, because if you lose enough of those games, you're going to be compared to teams who finish second place in the other three divisions where the schedules are easier, both in the division and out of the division. They don't have to play the Bills, Dolphins, and Patriots twice. They're playing the Jaguars, Texans, and Colts twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we talked about the Titans and what Mike Vrabel's trying to do. The Titans, who once upon a time that was the name of the Jets, they may be in a better position than the Jets unless the Jets win the division, when you consider the schedule in and out of the division for the course of the year. So that's going to be the challenge. The talent is there. Making it all come together, getting it all on the same page, getting the most out of it, and winning those games is going to be key. And it really starts right out of the gates. Week one, Bills at home. Dalvin Cook versus James Cook. Just like last year, November in Buffalo when it was Vikings-Bills. The brothers are getting together. The Cook brothers, both guys, will likely be RB1 in week one. And who knows, maybe Breece Hall will have something to say about that with the Jets. But Chris, I said this early on, and this I always say week one. Whatever the outcome is, don't worry about it, unless you lose at home to a division rival. Because if you lose at home to a division rival, you got to go there later in the year. If you get swept by that team, makes it a lot harder to win the division.
Yeah.
And if the Bills sweep the Jets, makes it a lot harder for the Jets to overcome the Bills to win the AFC East. That first game, Monday night, critical for the Jets. And now they've added an extra piece that, yeah, I think they appreciate. And we've heard Robert Saleh, the coach of the team, talk about this, how difficult those first six games are.
Yeah, right.
You know, this Cook move may just be so we don't rush Breece Hall back prematurely.
Sure, right.
So we don't need him to be ready week one. We got Cook to help us through
exactly. This
six-game stretch. And then we'll see where we are after our bye week and where Breece Hall is. But we got Dalvin Cook now to help us through this six-game gauntlet that may determine in many respects whether or not we're a playoff team. 3-3 minimum is what they got to go. 4-2 or 5-1 would be, hey, pencil
yeah,
them in.
Watch out. Right.
For the postseason, if they can do that well in those first six games.
No, I think you're there with we're on the same page. That's the Dalvin Cook. I think that's why you sign him. You know, like you're saying, it's the Bills. It's McDermott. There's no Leslie Frazier. It's a big division game. He's going to want to maybe add a wrinkle or two to the defense, getting it off on the right step. It's the Dallas Cowboys the next week. They know they can rush the quarterback. They don't want to trust some of these younger guys. And to your point, don't want to have rush Breece Hall and have that pressure on a guy that, you know, can be their starting running back for the next 3 years after this season. So I think that's where it makes a lot of sense. And then like we talked about, and, you know, we'll see more on Hard Knocks tonight, right? That comes out tonight again where, hey, him going through signals and doing the things at the line of scrimmage and some of the complaints I think we heard last week coming out of training camp there in Carolina are going to be that stuff. The game's going to start moving fast. He's going to be blue 48 and giving signals as he's saying blue 48. It's like if you don't catch it and stay on board, your ass is going to be on the sideline. And that's where I think Dalvin Cook is going to come in extremely handy for them. And then as we always talk about, right, if Rodgers can be aggressive, which he's proving through Hard Knocks, that he can still throw the ball down the field with the best of them. So that's why I'm going to continue to say, damn it, you need to be aggressive, Mr. Aaron Rodgers, but defending the whole field. If he does that, you know, and then they have a good, quick, short passing game and a run game and screen game with Dalvin Cook, man, there's going to be a lot of things you got to cover in that Jets offense, and it's going to make things interesting.
I wonder if the folks at NFL Films and HBO uttered a few curse words last night as they have the rough cut ready to make it final copy for this episode of Hard Knocks. And then they find out the Jets have signed Dalvin Cook. It's like, damn it. What are we going to cut out? What are we going to add in? What can we do here to cover
this? Do you think they make that late of a thing?
Wrinkle?
Yeah. Do you think they'll wait till next week or do they try to add it in tonight?
No.
Yeah. No,
I think they'll add it in.
Yeah.
They'll find a way to get it in
right
to this. Because it's never final until it's time to press the button at 10 o'clock Eastern tonight when the show goes live. My guess is
they
got
to call in Lee Schreiber and tell him to voice over another segment real quick for just in case, right? And you going to watch tonight? Are you going to be a hater on it?
I don't know. We'll see. Listen, I like things that are good. I'm sorry. I like the quarterback series. I think it's good. Apparently, Mad Dog Russo, not a fan of the quarterback series.
The quarterback series is good. I don't think it's as good as Hard Knocks right now. I'm into the quarterback series. Hard Knocks 1 was knocked it out of the park. I don't know what you could not.
Yeah, because you're an Aaron Rodgers fanboy.
If it was Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or any of the great quarterbacks, I would have been all over it. But I am an Aaron Rodgers fanboy. I would agree with that.
Episode 1 of Hard Knocks was basically episode 1 of next year's quarterback series with only one quarterback being featured, Aaron Rodgers. Because that's what it was. It was the Aaron Rodgers show. And that's fine. You play to your
strengths.
You're
just mad? You're mad because he said don't read crap like that? Or you're what are you mad at? Why don't you want to just buy into the show?
Care.
You're mad at Rodgers?
I have not. Listen, because it's the same cookie cutter stuff. We fall for it every year. We never get anything remotely close to what's truly going on behind the curtain. It's not a documentary. It's an infomercial. But people just accept it because they'd rather take an infomercial than nothing at all. The product is so good, we'll happily watch an infomercial featuring the team.
There was a lot of behind-the-scenes good stuff. I don't know what you're talking
about.
That
they wanted us to see.
Okay, fine. Well, what do you think they're going to show you? They're going to show you, like, the hey, here's the play that we want you to check to in the Super Bowl, right? I mean, I don't know. Quarterback series, they're not telling me some of that stuff either.
That'd be presumptuous. No, that's true. That's true. But at least – and I had that same take, that they're only giving us what they want to show us. Any of these things that are produced by NFL Films, you need to understand, as a consumer, you're only getting what they want you to see. It's house media. They are creating this for your entertainment, and they're not telling you the truth. We're numb to it because it's that or nothing. What's our alternative? No one is going to get the green light to go do a true documentary about what's happening behind the scenes. Except that guy that somehow was in the room doing the Saints documentary when Greg Williams was saying all that stuff about the 49ers. Remember that?
Well,
that guy's name was Sean something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only time we've ever gotten the truth about anything. So it tells you there's a hell of a disconnect between what they want us to know and what's actually going on. That's all
they're
I'm
never
going
to tell you all that stuff, geez. Right? You better watch tonight. I'm grilling you in the morning. You better watch it, okay?
All right. I may have an itch tonight. there's an angle here. Now I gotta go from yucking it up to being somewhat serious.
Okay.
Someone sent me this last night. Phil Mushnick of the New York Post had a column the morning after the Hall of Fame game in the New York Post.
Yeah.
In print. Arguing that they shouldn't pursue Dalvin Cook because of this still pending, lingering domestic violence issue with a lawsuit, and he's got counter lawsuits, and who knows what the hell happened. And in print, they had the photo of Cook on one side and one of the images that was attached to the lawsuit by his ex-girlfriend on the other side, and Mushnick making the argument there's just, you know, it's got this domestic violence angle to it that is just kind of not mentioned. It's kind of just, it's there, but nobody talks about it. And Mushnick's point is the Jets don't need this guy because we've got this unresolved issue out there. And who knows what we're going to find out. And is this the right person to bring in when you have these allegations? Again, he has fought back against them aggressively.
Yeah.
He has sued his alleged victim for defamation. He's sued her lawyer for defamation. And we have the item at PFT from several weeks back. He's won some victories preliminarily in court.
Yes, I saw that.
That make you think he may be onto something.
Right.
He may have something here. This may turn the tables on someone making these very strong claims that can hurt someone's public image, hurt his career in a very public sport like football, where they're very sensitive to these things. Mushnick's point is the Jets aren't being nearly sensitive enough to this issue. And I don't know what investigation they've done. I don't know where it all stands. I had heard from some in the business that one of the reasons that there wasn't the land rush for Dalvin Cook is there's this vague concern that maybe there is a suspension in the offing. If that's an issue, it surely didn't keep the Jets from pursuing him and giving him the $7 million base package with up to $1.6 million in incentives. But we'll see where that fits into this and what developments there may be. It's something for now that we just at least need to be aware of and pay attention to.
Yeah.
Because depending upon how things go, depending upon what the league does, there were never any criminal charges. The league could investigate. The league could impose discipline. It's just something to keep an eye on at a time when the Cook acquisition just adds to this sense of euphoria that the Jets have finally figured out the formula after all these years and they're going to be high-end contenders.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's lingering, like you said. I think that's why it's not getting a ton of attention. And yeah, I think we've seen some things to make us question it a little bit or see where it goes. It's a tough subject, as we know, very sensitive to it. But as I've told you before, I've seen those stories go both ways. I've seen it both ways. So that's where, you hope the Jets have done their due diligence and know something, have connections to, wait, we know the guy, we know the agent, we know a little bit of the background of the story. We're comfortable with it, and maybe they've talked to a few other people. You hope that's what's been done, to cover their own butts that way. But I think, we always got to be.
We just don't know.
Yeah.
We don't
gotta
know what the truth is.
Be careful about judging. Exactly right. That's all I'll say. As a player, I saw it go both ways and crazy ways. So that's where on this kind of subject, there's always that phrase, right? All is fair in love and war and all that, where I just go, I don't know. I just want to see all the details and we'll go from then. I'm not going to jump in, with just little parts of the story here and there.
Well, first of all, are we ever going to be privy to the details to make our own decision about what happened? And second of all, the bigger issue is there's a system, there's a process that's in place for sifting all this out in the civil justice system. And then you've got the separate proceedings of the National Football League that activate whenever they want them to activate, that go whatever direction they want them to go. Now, it's a little more fair to players than it had been in the past because of the presence of the Judge Sue L. Robinson dynamic, where the league has to prove a case to someone kind of independent at some point. Independent, I think it's fair to say independent because she's independently hired and paid by the NFL and the NFL Players Association. But there are processes here. There are steps here. There is information that will be learned by others whose job it is to learn that information and make decisions accordingly. We just need to be aware of it on the radar screen. And Chris, look, we know how this goes. Talent wins out. Last year, look at what the Browns did to get Deshaun Watson, despite all the pending civil lawsuits and the very strong likelihood he was getting suspended. They still did it. They gave up all the draft picks. They gave up that contract that turned the league on its ear, and Deshaun Watson got suspended 11 games. So we just need to be aware of it. And if there's a concern out there that some teams had, the Jets apparently didn't have enough of a concern to keep them from doing this deal and adding Dalvin Cook to the roster.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, you put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor, because you know the bigger the fight, the better the reward. Medela, the mark of the fight. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
Now, we rattled off the early season schedule for the New York Jets. Week 3, they take on the Patriots, and the Patriots have a new piece. As we mentioned earlier, the Ezekiel Elliott expected signing. It's not final yet, but it's expected he's going to sign with the Patriots on a one-year deal worth up to $6 million. That means the base is probably significantly less than that. That's when the agent wants to make it look good. That's right. When people want to save face. A guy that was making $12, $13 million a year up to $6 million could be a $3 million base that he could double with performance and production. Up to does a hell of a lot of work when it comes to agents trying to make deals look better than they are, and the people who are in the business of giving people a 5-minute heads up over what we're going to know about anyway. They just blindly run with it because otherwise you don't get the text. If you're not going to play the game and trumpet the bullcrap for the agent, you're going to be there while everybody else has the report. You're not going to have it. So up to $6 million is what everyone is saying. We'll get to the truth at some point. Look, Elliott didn't have a lot of options. Remember when his camp put out there, he's interested in the Bengals, the Eagles. He's considering the Bengals, the Eagles, and the Jets.
Right.
And it was like all three teams. Well, we're not interested in him.
Right.
So, you know, it took months for him to get something. And the Patriots were the only team that I think brought him in for a visit. Unless I'm missing somebody, it was the Patriots or nobody. The Cowboys had maybe talked about leaving the door open, but I don't think that was ever going to happen. So the Patriots are where he's going to be, apparently, for 2023.
Yeah, I mean, good for Zeke Elliott. Good for him. You know, he's not done. You know, does he got a little, you know, tread on the tire? Sure. Are the days of 1,000-yard rusher over? 100%. You know that, right? I mean, I am interested to see what that real number is in this contract, because New England's usually a little stingy with paying in these certain situations, especially at that running back position. But, like, we talked about Vrabel being old school and that mindset. Like, Belichick, of course, is old school as well. And there's two things that he likes on his roster. One is an old school, big, thumping middle linebacker. He's got to have one of those. Even when it's like kind of outdated in the NFL, the Patriots are still one of those teams that's got these huge middle linebackers. And then the other one is a sledgehammer power running back. Corey Dillon, LeGarrette Blount, Otis Anderson, you know, O.J. Anderson back in the jet day, right? There's great value in those type of players. And I think especially to Bill Belichick, because he looks at it and goes, you know, third and goal at the 1 foot line, that's a big play. That guy can smash it in there. You know, third and one at the 48-yard line to continue a drive and keep my defense off the field and keep moving the clock and wearing on the team. He finds value in that. And I think he probably looks at that roster and goes, wait, we don't have that guy right now. We have Ramondre Stevenson, but a little bit like we were talking about the Jets, after that, do we have anybody there that I could trust to do some of the dirty work and, you know, situational football, pick up blitzes and do all that? I think that's probably where the Patriots looked at it a little bit scary. Ramondre Stevenson's the guy, but now you got Ezekiel Elliott, who's a veteran guy who could take a little workload off and do some of the detailed stuff that, you know, the New England offense will ask a running back to do.
Strange depth chart,
very
unofficially,
right?
Posted last week by the Patriots. They've got Ty Montgomery on the roster listed as a receiver. On their unofficial depth chart, he's one of the starting running backs along with Ramondre Stevenson. You've got J.J. Taylor, Pierre Strong Jr., C.J. Marable, Kevin Harris also on there. And we know what the Patriots do. It's one of the reasons why we always thought Josh Jacobs was not long for the Raiders, because that McDaniels mindset and Bill O'Brien, I think, will have it as well, where you have your stable of running backs. You put together your game plan to counter what you plan or what you expect from the opposing defense. How are you going to attack it? Which skill set from our running backs do we need? Do we
exactly.
need a guy that's going to run outside the tackles?
Right.
Do we need a guy that's going to run inside? Do we need a guy that's going to catch passes? Do we need a guy that's going to block? What do we need in this week's game plan? And that's what it's going to be for Ezekiel Elliott. There's going to be an Ezekiel Elliott game, and then there may not be one for a couple of weeks. It's going to be a Ramondre Stevenson game. Maybe there's going to be a Ty Montgomery game, right? And I think Elliott has to accept that going in. And the good news for Elliott is it extends his career if he's not used the way that he was earlier in it,
right,
where he's that sledgehammer all the time, all the time, all the time. He can maybe milk a few more years out of it. He could try to, you know, have enough good tape this year that maybe somebody gives him a shot next year, although we know which way the wind's blowing on the running back position, and he will be another year older,
right,
in 2024, as we all will be. So it's, you know, I was always surprised that they were interested. More importantly, I was surprised he was interested. But I think at the end of the day,
limited options,
there aren't many teams
like
interested
said.
In you.
Right.
You better get interested in who is,
right,
or you're going to be watching this year.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. And I think, you know, to your point, it'll be situational football. I think Ramondre Stevenson's the guy, and they will work him. I mean, he was a 1,000-yard rusher last year, right? He was pretty good in the pass game coming out of the backfield too. But I think one of the ways they take a little bit of the workload off of him is kind of what you're saying. Hey, you know, second, third, and short this week, it's Ezekiel Elliott. Ramondre will save you. You don't have to take those car crash hits. Some of the pass plays in the pass game, like you're saying. Hey, we'll get this guy out here to do this. We'll do, hey, Ty Montgomery, hey, you take these handful of plays. I think you're exactly right. I think Ramondre Stevenson's the guy, and then in little parts of the game will dictate who comes in to run a little special package for them specifically in the game, and I think that's what we'll see from the Patriots this year.
Ramondre Stevenson is still operating under his rookie contract. I mean, a lot of clues will reside in the financial pecking order at the position. Stevenson due to make $940,000 this year. Again, that has to do with the fact that he's still in his rookie deal.
Yeah,
it's year 3. I'm going to be very curious, Chris, to see how Ezekiel Elliott's deal is structured. That up to $6 million. You just, folks, always be suspicious and curious when you hear up to and nothing else. Like, at least with Cook, we're hearing 7 base up to 8.6. When all you get is the up to, the implication is the base may not be anything to write home about. It's definitely not anything
I
to
would
brag
think so.
About, and it's not even being talked about. So what will happen is, at some point after the deal is signed, the contract will be available both through the league and the union, and I'll get my hands on it, and we'll know exactly what Ezekiel Elliott is guaranteed to make this year, what the base is, and then how it is that he gets to six. Does he have to be the Super Bowl MVP to get to six? I mean, sometimes those packages in there, Chris, you've seen them. It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah,
it's ridiculous. You have to cure polio to become eligible for the high-end pack.
That's what I would expect. I would expect a lot of that. Yeah, right. I would expect a lot of that. You know, that's what I would think. I mean, Ramondre Stevens, like we said, is really damn good. It's really damn good. I mean, he was 1,000 yards rushing last year with a kindergarten pass offense. Let's not forget that. So that was pretty good, right? And they had some issues on the O-line and things there that they had to work out. So that's where it is. And then, hey, guys, throw up the graphic we saw of the yards and stats of Ezekiel Elliott over the last few years. That's another one. I mean, again, money, all that. Hey, Ezekiel Elliott's been paid. Ramondre Stevenson hasn't. This guy has been making $15 million a year, averaging 65 yards a game in 2020, 58 yards a game in 2021, 58 yards game in 2022, and he's been making $14 and $15 million a year. So, you know, at this point, I just look at him and go, hey, you got paid. I'm glad you're getting more. I don't expect it to be a big number. We've talked about it a lot, right? We showed a ton of highlights here. Ezekiel Elliott between the tackles, car crash runner. But in space, yeah, there's meat left on the bone a lot of the times. That's why they turned to Tony Pollard, and they turned to him too late in a lot of ways. You and I think, both agree on that. So we'll see what Zeke has in the tank here. And I would think, like you're saying, it's a significantly lower number than $6 million.
4 years ago, when Ezekiel Elliott held out, we advocated for him to do so. He got a great contract, and he ended up getting too great of a contract, that tied the Cowboys' hands. They would have cut him a year ago based upon his production, but that contract had the rolling guarantees where the 2021 money was guaranteed in 2020. The 2022 money was guaranteed in 2021. They couldn't get out of it. They had a tough spot after the 2021 season, and they were stuck. They couldn't escape the deal. It ended up being very good for Ezekiel Elliott. But it's another reason why teams are skittish about giving these big contracts to running backs.
Right.
Because you quickly regret it. Because they're older, they're banged up, they're not performing the way they used to, and we can get younger, cheaper guys to do definitely what they're doing now, and younger, cheaper guys to maybe become who they were early in their careers. Okay, so the big takeaway from all this, if I'm Josh Jacobs, and I suspect it's not going to happen because he's too pissed off at the Raiders. But if I'm Josh Jacobs, and if I'm advising him, or if I'm his father, his uncle, his cousin, his friend, his neighbor, whoever, anybody in a position to influence him, I'd be saying, hey, Josh, you should probably take that 10.1 while you can. Because you're not going to get 10.1 anywhere else this year. And I think he already knows that. I think he'd be fine with the Raiders rescinding the tender, and he would go get whatever he could, wherever he could. And I think he'd be very interested in going to the Chiefs and pursuing a championship.
Yeah.
The Broncos have been interested in
him.
Because he's franchise tagged, non-exclusive, you know, other teams are allowed to talk. Like, his agent has an idea of who else would be interested if he suddenly becomes available. But $10.1 million isn't going to happen. If Dalvin Cook's deal is $7 million with incentives, the only way you're getting close to $10.1 is with some sort of an incentive package that is triggered when you have a deal or a season like you had last year.
Right.
Like, you're going to have to go out and be a superstar to get anywhere close to $10.1 million. So if I'm Josh Jacobs, I'm going to take the $10.1 million. I mean, you know, he's upset they didn't pick up the fifth-year option. Well, if they picked up the fifth-year option, he'd be under contract this year at about $8 million. So he made a couple million dollars by them not picking up the fifth-year option. So I'll just take the franchise tag. Yeah, I'm upset they didn't give me a long-term deal. Yeah, I feel like they've disrespected me every step of the way. Yeah, I feel like they're not treating me like they really care about me, and they're just playing this year-to-year game, and they're going to keep me for two more years at the most, and then I'm going to be gone. And who's going to pay me then? Where am I going to play then? At a certain point, you just have to say, you know what? I want to play football, and they're paying me $10.1 million.
That's right.
And I better take it while I can.
Yeah, I think we've both been on that bandwagon here for quite some time. There's no other options. All other options hurt Josh Jacobs. That's why we want to see Josh Jacobs sign this and get it done and play. It's your best option. Now, this is not available anywhere else, right? The Raiders need you. He knows that. But don't need you enough to where they're going to sign you to some big long-term deal. They're not going to do that. You know, they're not. You said it earlier. It's the New England thought process. It's everything there. And so I don't imagine that happening. So please, Josh Jacobs, go in, sign that franchise tag, and get to work and put your best foot forward. And maybe you can get a 2-, 3-, 4-year contract with somebody after the year. Maybe, like you're saying, you get franchised again and you get a little more than $10 million once again. You know, but I don't expect it. And not even that, where, Mike, I'm with you. Like, if I was the Raiders, I'd be worried. One, I've heard rumors about, you know, Denver and Kansas City. And, man, even the Chargers. I mean, I'd be worried about him going in the division and having that, you know, fly back in our face in a bad way. But I'd be worried about it, but it doesn't mean you're going to give him a long-term big money contract, and that's just not going to happen.
Well, they can't now.
Yeah,
they
that's
can't
right. Of course
year.
Not. Duh. Yes.
Yeah, that's over. Right. That ended a month ago. But look, and it's funny when you put ideas out there, the people who cover the team regularly sometimes will sneer, either because they didn't think of it or they're accepting the bull crap that they're being fed by the people they cover, and they kind of have to run interference. They have to act like they believe them. Big picture, everything that I've heard about this leads me to believe that there is a very good chance, as we get to the doorstep of the season, the Raiders are going to pull out that $10.1 million welcome mat, and it's going to be gone. And the fact that the Chiefs are a potential destination, the fact that the Broncos are a potential destination, the fact that the Chargers are a potential destination, that incentivizes the Raiders to wait as long as possible to remove the tender.
Yeah.
And so, right. You know, it ultimately comes down to, because I think that, I don't think they applied the tender with an intent to later remove it. But this running back market is a living, breathing entity that is not breathing very well and not living very well. The market has changed. And yesterday's developments, that's the catalyst. That's the thing that the Raiders can point to when they finally do it. And maybe they're just waiting for Mark Davis to come to this conclusion on his own. Maybe Dave Ziegler, the GM, and Josh McDaniels, the head coach, have wanted to do this all along. We're just going to remove this tender. If he's upset, if he doesn't want it, fine. Fine. We'll take our $10.1 million back. Fine. We saved face by tagging him. We had to tag him. He had the big year. He's the recipient of the first ever Jim Brown Award. Led the league in rushing. We can't just let him walk away. We can't do that. We have to do something here. And, you know, I remember when I was told a few weeks back that when they finally made a long-term offer, it was couched as, we're going to make this offer so you can't say we never made you an offer. Well, how real is that, right? We need to make you an offer so we can say we made you an offer. They're playing a PR game externally and maybe internally with the owner. And now that Elliott's taking up to six, and maybe once we see the details of the Elliott contract, that's the moment the lightning strikes for Mark Davis, and he says, why do we have $10.1 million on the books for Josh Jacobs if this is where the market is? But, you know, we get down to that last week before the season, and it may be, there may be a moment where Josh Jacobs is thinking, this is my last chance for this 10-1. I better take it. And this is the Raiders thinking, this is our last chance to yank this 10-1. We better yank it. And because I think there's a sweet spot right before the start of the season where Jacobs better take it, and the Raiders, if they're thinking about removing it, they better remove it. And the closer it is to week one, the harder it is for him to go somewhere else and hurt the Raiders in 2023.
Yeah, agreed. You know, he's not as prepared. He might not be in football shape. What's he been doing in the meantime anyways? Do the other teams have that type of money and wiggle room to get him on the roster now? All of that. I mean, all those are fair points.
Your depth chart set.
Right.
Your guys are ready. How do you upset the locker room by bringing him in all of a sudden?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into that if they wait, definitely. Now, just the flip side of that is – Josh Jacobs is way better than Ezekiel Elliott, right? This is the guy that led the NFL in rushing. And the flip side to that, too, where I would say, and this is where you know me, yeah, I'm a supporter of that group out there in the Raiders. I'm a believer in Josh McDaniels and those guys that they got from New England there. So I do root for them. And I look at it and go, damn, it's a big year. And, you know, as we've joked, they got Mr. Glass at quarterback, you know? It's aware, damn, the running game is going to be a big deal for this football team to get them over the hump, to make them real, to make them competitive. And that's where I just wonder, too, like, would they ever throw a little extra money, you know, on top of the pot like the Giants did with Saquon Barkley just to get it done, to have him there this year? I would, if you're willing to pay 10.8 to franchise him and have him, and he's clearly the best running back on your roster, then, you know, for this year, save your head coach's job, all those kind of the money you might have to pay him if it looks really horrible and you got to fire him because the fan base goes crazy. To me, it's pocket change in this kind of movement or this kind of move. And I would think about it.
First of all, I don't think Josh McDaniels is in any real trouble because I don't think Mark Davis wants to fire coaches and owe them money.
Yeah, right.
And
right. Yeah.
I think he feels compelled to let this ride out a little
bit
longer.
Okay, good. That's
and
good.
With or without Josh Jacobs, what are their prospects this year anyway? With or without him? If he shows up today, are they suddenly playoff contenders? No, they're not because of how difficult the rest of the division is and how difficult the rest of the conference is. Like, we talk all the time about the Texans being the one team in the AFC. Well, you do, because you're the one that's going to wear the coat of shame if they end up making it. But the Texans are the one team that stands out as having no chance.
Sure.
And I'm just playing around. I agree with you on that. If there's another team least likely to make it to the playoffs, the next team would be the Raiders.
Yeah, I hear you.
Wouldn't it?
I hear you, yeah.
So what's Josh Jacobs really going to do for Josh McDaniels this year? Not much. And you mentioned the possibility of sprinkling on a little bit more like the Giants did with Saquon. That's the easy way out of this. Just offer him more money or offer him a commitment that you won't tag him next year. Give him a path to the open market if he has another big season. Don't just reward him with a 20% raise. Let him go out and get a bigger raise. Let him go out and test the market. Maybe you have to compete with other teams and you can sign them and bring them back that way. But there was a report a few weeks ago that the Raiders were open to a Saquon-type package. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
Remember that?
That's why I was bringing it up again.
There's now, I haven't checked on this in the past week or so, but you would expect there would be some communication, some dialogue in the aftermath of that report. There was nothing. There was nothing. So I keep coming back to this idea that this is a broader PR play. This is a more calculated strategic effort to get people comfortable with the inevitable, possibly, eventual rescinding of the franchise tag. And then the columnists, the people who cover the team, they'll be able to provide cover for the team on why they did what they did. Well, we tried this, we tried this, we tried this, we tried this. It was obvious he didn't want to be here. Look at what's happened with the market. We no longer could justify this kind of money for a running back given the dynamics of the position, yada, yada, yada. They were going to do it all along, and now they do it at a time when he can't get that money anywhere else, and it's harder for him to go somewhere else and make them look bad. Regardless of where he goes, whether it's in the division, out of the division, out of the conference, if he goes somewhere and has 1,500 rushing yards, it makes them look bad. If he goes somewhere and has 500 rushing yards, they don't look so bad.
No.
And I think that's part of this. And we'd be naive to assume that games like that aren't played by organizations.
Right. Right.
Remember, these guys are all pieces interchangeable in a giant football machine. And if you're going to remove a piece and discard it, you don't want to regret it later. You don't want to be the guy that has to live down. All he does is catch touchdowns when Chris Carter gets booted out of the Eagles and becomes a Hall of Famer with another team.
That's all I'm saying. You don't want that on your resume. That's why I'd splash a little more money on the pot and try to make that happen. That's what I'd be worried about. Just, again, like I've said, you know, the people, for whatever reason, always seem like they want to jump on Josh McDaniels. So, you know, I just think of the worst sometimes in these scenarios. Oh, yeah, hey, the Raiders, you know, to your point, I understand. They're low on the pecking order in the AFC. They're also probably looking at it going, if our quarterback wasn't so bad in the fourth quarter of games last year, we would have been 9-8. I mean, the quarterback they had last year really had some issues late in some games where you go, they should have won that game. They were in total control. They lost. So, they got to be looking at themselves going, wait, we can be a little bit better than people realize here. And Josh Jacobs would be a huge part of that. And I would worry that, oh, here we are, you know, to your point, it's week 15 and he's on the Broncos. Oh, and he's got 1,300 yards rushing and the Broncos squeak in the playoffs and the Raiders don't. And it's because of Josh Jacobs. That starts the negative downturn of crap coaches and organizations have to deal with and starts the piling on effort by everybody. That's all I'm saying. I'm just throwing it out there for food for thought, and, you know, is it worth it is all I'm saying out there.
And they already have to worry about that with Derek Carr in New Orleans.
Exactly. Right, right.
I feel much better about the Saints making it to the playoffs this year than I do the Raiders, primarily because of the division and the conference that the Saints are in versus where the Raiders are. So they've already got that concern with their quarterback from last year. Now they may have that concern with their running back from last year. Who knows where this is all going to go? But Josh, we've interviewed him in the past. Remember when he was coming out of Alabama? He gave us a very candid stuff. The Alabama had lost a playoff game, and he said they weren't ready. Remember that?
Yeah.
He was very, very good.
Right.
It's been 4 years ago. Josh, we're thinking of your best interest. Go get that 10-1 while you can, because the market has changed dramatically. At 10-1, all of a sudden, is a pretty good deal. Get it while you can, because it may not be there by the time week one rolls around. All right, let's take a break. When we return, Zach Martin took a stand. Zach Martin held out. Zach Martin ultimately won. We'll talk about his new deal with the Cowboys when PFT Live continues right after this.
It's hard not to add a side of hot, crispy hash browns to your favorite McDonald's breakfast. It's even harder not to eat said hash browns before you get home. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.